Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we crack open stacks of research to give you the ultimate shortcut to being well-informed. Today, we are diving headfirst into the great modern challenge, distraction. We're going to try and emerge with the complete blueprints for achieving, you know, total time mastery and some genuine focus. Our sources, well, they immediately confirm what you probably already suspect. Maintaining focus is... it's a nightmare. There was this one shocking study that showed 60% of employees, they can't go 30 minutes without getting sidetracked.
It's too good.
Yeah, by conversations, texts, emails. We are just constantly being pulled away from the deep, meaningful work we need to be doing.
Right.
So our mission today is pretty simple. We are here to stop reacting to all the urgent demands of the day and instead start focusing deliberately on what's actually important. We've collected foundational mindsets, frameworks, and some really actionable techniques to help you boost knowledge efficiency and create those crucial breakthrough moments.
And what's really fascinating here is the sheer breadth of strategies we have. It just confirms that time management is so far from a one-size-fits-all solution.
Absolutely.
Our materials cover... well, everything from established professional productivity systems, student success tips from places like Harvard and USAHS, all the way down to these essential psychological insights into what, you know, what governs our mental performance and executive function.
And the why behind all this is so important, isn't it?
That's absolutely crucial. Effective time management isn't just about, you know, cranking out more widgets. It's linked directly to well-being. When you know what you should be doing and you're actually doing it, you reduce that perceived stress and anxiety. You break what one source calls the stress spiral of doom.
I love that phrase, the stress spiral of doom. It's so visceral.
It really is. And it perfectly captures that cycle. You know, the anxiety about a task leads to delay.
Mm-hmm.
The delay makes the task feel even harder and bigger.
Right.
Which, of course, just causes more anxiety.
Mm.
And then it just spirals into total avoidance. So breaking that cycle through better organization, it fundamentally improves your cognitive function and gives you a much, much better work-life balance.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Before you download some fancy app or, you know, buy a new productivity notebook, you have to choose your system.
Yes.
The sources are really clear on this. You have to find a personalized system, something that makes sense for the way you function. Because if a system requires you to fight your own nature every single day, it's doomed to fail within a week.
Exactly. Don't fall prey to that initial excitement of a new methodology.
Right, the shiny new toy syndrome.
Exactly. That novelty, it wears off almost immediately. You have to give any new technique a reasonable trial period, to suggest, you know, 1 day to 1 week. And at the end of that trial, you need an honest, really introspective check-in.
Okay, so what do you ask yourself?
You ask,
yeah,
did this work? Did I feel less stressed? Was I getting more things done and done better? And this is the critical one.
Hmm.
Am I spending more time organizing this system than actually doing the work?
That honest check-in is vital. And a core part of that personalization has to be acknowledging your natural energy rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start your day energized, what we call your peak productivity window, that's when you plan your heavy lifting, your studying, your chores, your most demanding tasks.
Right.
And if you typically fall into an afternoon slump, you should build a guilt-free break or some social time into that slot.
Yeah.
A personalized schedule has to realistically accommodate everything, classes, work, chores, social stuff. If it looks impossible on paper, it is impossible in practice.
And this brings us to a really foundational principle. Time management is about reducing friction.
Reducing friction. I like that.
Our sources stress that you are not trying to become a different person.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't rely on a system that hinges on a known weakness. You're not just resolving to try harder.
Right. That's not a plan.
It's not a plan. It's a resolution. What you're doing is implementing structural changes to get more done better by removing the roadblocks that are already in your routine. And that's the difference between relying on willpower versus relying on an intelligent, personalized design.
Okay, so once your mindset is right, you need the tools to capture and organize all the chaos. Let's look at the heavy hitters in structured organizational frameworks, maybe starting with the most comprehensive one.
We have to start with getting things done, or DTD, David Allen's method. The whole purpose is to clear your head by getting everything, every thought, every task, every stray idea out of your brain and into an external system.
So you're saving mental energy.
Exactly. It's built on a five-step framework. Capture, clarify, organize, reflect, and engage.
That sounds incredibly thorough, but I have to push back a little on the warning we saw on the sources. Isn't the comprehensive nature of GTD exactly why it fails for most people? I mean, it sounds less like a personal system and more like a second job.
That's a powerful and honestly an accurate point. The tros for GTD are clear. It's highly structured. It's excellent for people who struggle to remember tasks because the to-do list is entirely external.
Okay.
However, the cons are significant. It requires a large initial time commitment to set up, and it needs constant, dedicated maintenance. And here's the crucial insight from the sources. Most users fail because they skip the reflect step.
The weekly review.
A weekly review. If you aren't doing that comprehensive review of your system, the whole thing just collapses into an overwhelming mess. Which brings us to the serious warning.
Yeah.
If you are prone to procrastination, you might spend more time organizing your system.
Creating labels and subtasks.
Yes. You get that false feeling of being productive, but you're just organizing, not doing.
A completely different approach, and a far more visual one, is the Kanban board.
Right.
This tool visually depicts work at various stages of a process. You just use simple cards and columns. The most common categories are to do, doing, or in progress, and then done or completed.
So you can see everything at a glance.
Exactly. Kanban started in manufacturing, but it has incredible applications now everywhere, from software development to marketing teams. And it's especially great for personal task management. They're fantastic because you instantly see where the bottlenecks are. If you're looking to try this, tools like Trello and Notion are prime examples that use this visual drag and drop system.
And then finally, for those who prefer maximum flexibility and maybe a physical tool, there's the bullet journal or Bujo. It's a hybrid system, highly customizable, whether you prefer, you know, pen and paper or a digital format.
I've seen some amazing ones.
Oh, yeah. You can tailor logs for daily tasks or even use specific spreads to track an entire semester, as one of our student sources suggested. But the drawback to the Bujo is immense customization.
Let me guess. Procrastination.
It's the potential trap of making the journal too pretty. It's just another form of productive-seeming procrastination. You can spend hours selecting the perfect pen colors and stickers instead of focusing on the actual tasks you need to complete.
Okay, so frameworks help us capture the chaos, but capturing is only half the battle. Now, let's talk pure kinetic energy. How do we actually execute the work? Here's where it gets really interesting, as we look at specific high-impact techniques designed to boost execution.
The Pomodoro technique is one of the most popular strategies for this. It breaks work down into timed intervals. Usually it's 25 minutes of work followed by a 5-minute break.
And then a longer break after a few cycles.
Exactly. After four of those intervals, you take a longer 20 to 30 minute break. The pros are huge. It maximizes focus by using the natural limits of our attention span. And that hard time limit provides a fantastic nudge for procrastinators who struggle to just start.
And the breaks help with burnout.
Right. But be warned, the rigid timing can absolutely interrupt a deep concentration or a flow state. And it's very difficult to maintain in interruption-prone environments, like an open office or a busy home.
For prioritization, we have two related heavyweights focused on tackling the biggest challenges first. The MIT method, or most important tasks, requires you to identify just 1 to 3 tasks that are truly critical.
Meaning they have the biggest impact.
Exactly. They drive the most significant results toward your long-term goals. The benefit is you make clear progress and you get that reliable dopamine hit for getting high-value stuff done. But the warning, which we have to flag, is that it's easy to complete that one big task, pat yourself on the back, and then...
And then call it a day.
Right. You stop working for the day and you neglect all those smaller tasks that keep the rest of your life running smoothly. This connects directly to the method called eat that frog.
That phrase, which was inspired by Mark Twain, suggests you should start your day by doing the most onerous task, the nastiest frog, first.
Get it out of the way.
Get it out of the way, and nothing worse can happen to you the rest of the day. The core insight here is that both MIT and Eat That Frog are designed to ensure you spend your peak energy hours on things that actually move the needle, rather than using your freshest hours to, you know, sort emails or reorganize your digital files. But the best system in the world won't save you if you ignore the environmental and physiological factors that affect focus. These are
foundational, the non-system stuff.
Exactly. First, optimize your environment. Limit distractions by turning off non-essential notifications and, crucially, tidying your workspace to minimize visual clutter. That clutter competes for your mental resources.
Okay, that makes sense.
Second, prioritize physical health. Routine exercise, about 30 minutes 5 times a week, is linked to significantly improved cognitive function. And, critically, get enough sleep. The National Sleep Foundation reminds us that less than 7 hours a night consistently leads to cognitive impairment.
It's non-negotiable.
It is. Third, practice mindfulness. Just deep breathing for 2 or 3 minutes, or use meditation apps like Headspace and Calm to train your brain to stay present.
Now let's talk about the calendar, because the sources are adamant that it needs to be your master tool. It's not just a place to track due dates.
Mm-hmm.
Time blocking, which is famously used by people like Elon Musk, involves scheduling specific blocks for deep work, for meetings, and even for leisure time.
You're telling your time where to go.
Exactly. And the key to making this realistic is including all the incidentals. You can't schedule 8 hours of tasks in an 8-hour workday. You have to include transit time, meal prep, hygiene, relaxation.
All the little things that add up.
All of it. Give yourself extra padding or buffer time just in case, or you are absolutely setting yourself up for failure by over-optimizing.
And when you allocate that time, you have to remember Parkinson's Law.
Which is?
Work expands to fill the available time for its completion.
Right. If you give yourself a week, it takes a week.
Precisely.
Yeah.
But understanding this law allows you to use it as a method. Set hard, artificial deadlines to force efficiency. For instance, try to finish a project before your computer battery dies, or just cut your self-imposed deadline in half. That external manufactured pressure focuses the mind in a way that just saying I'll work faster simply cannot. This raises an important question, though. What happens when the mental blocks are just too strong? We need to tackle procrastination head on.
Yeah.
Procrastination is often mistakenly labeled as laziness, but the sources define it clearly. It's actually an emotional decision to delay a goal, despite knowing there will be negative consequences.
So it's about mood, not time.
It's a failure of mood regulation, not a failure of time planning.
Thankfully, we have some practical anti-procrastination techniques right from our sources. First, try the deadline lie. Lie to yourself about the due dates.
Set them early.
Set them hours or even days early, and treat those deadlines as firm and unchangeable. Second, use small treats as bribery, maybe 10 minutes of video games or reading after 30 minutes of solid work.
A little reward.
A little reward. And one technique our sources flagged as particularly potent for overcoming that inertia is the easy start. At the end of the day, you leave one small, easy, obvious step undone.
Oh, that's clever.
It is. When you sit down the next morning, you have an effortless starting point, which really helps overcome that initial mental block of starting a complex task from scratch.
And for those struggling with executive function challenges, which refers to the mental skills like working memory, flexible thinking, and self-control.
Things common in people with ADHD or anxiety.
Exactly. For them, body doubling is a surprisingly powerful tool. This involves performing a task, even studying or cleaning in the presence of another person, either in real life or virtually over video chat.
That sounds like simple accountability, but the sources imply there's a deeper psychological mechanism at play. Can you explain how that works?
It is absolutely deeper than just accountability. Body doubling works because social interactions activate the brain's dopamine reward circuitry. They enhance motivation and focus. When another person is present, even virtually, it triggers a mild performance drive that kicks up those feel-good neurochemicals, dopamine, to make the mundane or overwhelming task slightly more rewarding and manageable.
So to make it work.
For it to be effective, you need to set clear ground rules, maintain visibility with your double, and always set a timer, since individuals with executive function challenges often struggle with time estimation.
Okay, the final high-impact roadblock we have to address is the inability to say no.
A big one.
If you say yes to everybody, you are not going to do anything well.
Yeah.
Learning to protect your priorities is just essential for preventing burnout.
Absolutely.
The advice here is simple. No is a whole sentence. But in a professional context, you can temper it by being polite, giving adequate reasons, and maybe offering an alternative solution.
Right.
Perhaps you suggest you'll tackle the knock later when your schedule frees up, or you recommend a colleague who might be better suited. That way, you protect your focus without burning bridges.
You know, we've covered a tremendous amount of ground today. We've moved from understanding this massive problem of modern distraction to implementing organizational frameworks like GPD and Kanban, and finally diving into execution techniques like Pomodoro, MIT, and body doubling.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. And the key takeaway from all of this information has to be customized application. You need to identify your personal rhythms, reduce your specific points of friction, and use the tools that complement your strengths, not the ones that punish your weaknesses.
So what does this all mean for you right now? Don't try to implement everything at once.
Please don't.
Time management is not about achieving some unattainable perfection. It's about achieving clarity and consistency. The skills for executive functions need to last a lifetime, so you have to start small. Pick just one new tool or one new trick. Integrate it, and then build your productivity foundation slowly.
As a final thought, I want you to consider the concept of the pickle jar theory. You categorize tasks as rocks, your most important goals, pebbles, necessary but flexible tasks, and sand, disrupting elements like emails or social media.
Okay.
I want to challenge you to look at your current organizational system and honestly identify which of your daily tasks or even which of your organizational behaviors, like endlessly customizing your Bujo or tweaking your GTD labels, are merely sand in the jar, preventing you from focusing on the truly vital rocks you need to complete today.